going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of your WTF Prime Time! I am Vangelis, here to host for you some talk about sexy spider ladies. With me today is Gog Dog.
Don't forget the sexy bicycle ladies as well.
Hey, you know, I just wanted to bring up one at a time. I figured we'd cover all our bases on our way through these introductions. Also at our side is Aaron!
So somehow managed to make it here today. More concrete, yay.
Concrete. Hey, that relates to this episode, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I have something to say on that topic.
Oh, you're going to drop some mad concrete science?
A little bit.
Oh, let's wait till we get there. And finally joining us, the only one of this crew who has not seen Dark of the Moon yet, Omegas Prime.
I'm spoiling everyone's good time because no one can talk about it yet.
Hey, you guys remember when that thing happened with the and when they were doing that? It was so good. And what's great, though, is that I think we've found out a way to talk in that manner that we still understand what we're talking about.
Right.
Like, I went on Twitter and I was like, you know, that scene that we saw at BotCon, which was cool, got an applause, and everyone went like, oh, I know what you mean. And I was like, wow, that's...
I will admit, I made a joke tweet about, you know, the redacted thing. If the redacted, I think, what was it? If the redacted did the redacted, then I would redact out my redact. And I had somebody message me, be like, what are you talking about, man? It was kind of a joke, but thanks.
Dish! Spill it!
Yeah.
Anyway, this is not yet the Dark of the Moon podcast. This is Crisscross, which I actually did not get around to watching until about 2 minutes before I jumped into the Skype call. So it's very fresh in my mind. And you know, if I had ended up utterly hating Dark of the Moon, this would have been a real great, you know, I still love Transformers thing. But I'll leave that for the Dark of the Moon podcast. Crisscross was another mech episode. It was another Arachnid episode. It was another Jack RC episode, which is a whole bunch of things that tend to go really well in Transformers Prime. So to have them mesh together had me quite excited. So let's open up. Let's talk about a character who we have not seen in a long time, who made a stirring return this episode, Mrs. Darby, Jack's mom, who finally returned from obscurity, voiced by good old Marky Post.
Yeah, weren't we just talking about how what the heck's happened to the parents?
Yeah, and
they heard us through space and time.
And all that stuff from the Hall of Fame montage that we were talking about, I wonder when that's going to happen, all happened in this episode.
Yeah.
So now we no longer know what's going to happen. We've lost all of our advanced BotCon knowledge. But Jack's mom had quite a role in this episode, and she was still, I think, you know, a very likable character. I think they're doing a good job of getting her across as, you know, like not really an older parent. She seems like a bit of a younger single parent to me in the way she's portrayed. And it's quite endearing. I enjoyed her quite a bit. Let's talk a little bit about Jack's mom. Gog, what do you think of Jack's mom?
Nothing mind-blowingly amazing, but she's not annoying. And that, I think, as far as human characters go, that says a lot.
Yeah.
At least for me, she seems like a mother who loves her kid. She's not a caricature of a nervous mother. She's played like maybe the mother that as a kid we didn't wish we had, but as adults looking back, it's the mother you always wish you had. to put it like that, she's just a single mother. She loves her kid. She's not afraid to punish him, but she doesn't want to. She wants to trust him. Works late nights to put food on the table, but she's never in a bad mood. She comes home.
I think she has bad
ahead,
time
Aaron.
Management skills.
Okay.
You paused long. No, it was because she was coming home for her break to make him a wholesome dinner, and one thing happened, and it was, I can't make you dinner now. Sorry.
No. Now you mess with my mojo.
Sorry.
You've been putting a fork in the Gog Dog Express.
Well,
you're splitting the railroad.
I'm trying to keep things trying to separate into as much categories as possible, but I guess there's really no sense. I was like with what Vangelis said, like we saw that footage of her at BotCon with her seeing all the other Autobots, and it's like, well, like I think I had my theory was that it was going to be perhaps something from the season finale. It's like, no, all that extra footage we saw was literally from one episode because that's yeah. that's the episode after Operation Breakdown. But I'm kind of happy about that. Like one thing that Prime. And I don't. It can always play right if you do it correctly, like drag things out to a climax. But like, there's not a lot of that in here where they sit on things and then bring it up later. It's like, okay, there's the humorous part where she catches Jack out late. He's walking the bike up, so he doesn't wake her up. But she knows he's not there, so she's waiting for him. And she grounds him. He's not allowed to use his motorcycle. His whole, look, Mom, I admit it, finally. I mean, and this was the next night, I think, when he was on his 10-speed. But yeah. And it's just like, but she's not, like, she doesn't think her son is crazy. She's just like, there's something going on here. I need to get the bottom of it. It wasn't like this whole, like, long, drawn out, like, oh, my God, my son is nuts. I need to get him professional help. I'm going to call the psychiatrist. It was just... She's just like, you're acting really weird. We'll talk about this later. And I almost kind of appreciated how understated that whole scene was because it seemed way more believable to me.
I like that when he finally drops, you know, like it's a robot, there's Transformers, blah, blah, blah. She just kind of looks at him like, oh, you're lying so much.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is it a science fiction club? Like that was the best line where she's just trying
like, come
to...
On. Like don't let it be drugs. Don't let it be drugs. Don't let it be drugs.
She wants to understand so much. She's just like, well, maybe it's a science fiction club. Maybe you're just really getting into some kind of nerdy stuff. I don't know. Like, I love also when RC, like, suddenly appears in the garage after she saw that she wasn't there. Jack's mom is like, I love that her term was like, did you get one of your crew to wheel it in? Like, Jack's got a gang now?
Yeah.
Like, she's just trying to make some sense of it. I loved it. Because, as you said, it was also nice and understated. It just played like, you know, a parent who just really wanted to understand, yeah. like, what...
I love this little implication in there that Jack somehow had taken his bike out without permission, but somehow got back in time to get his bike, get down the road, and make it look like he had come in on his bike the whole time. But didn't have time to get the bike back into the garage.
Well, that would just be the psychological break of I just looked in there and it wasn't there. And if it's something like the milk in the carton behind something in the fridge, that's one thing. But a motorcycle in an otherwise empty garage, it's got to be like, what? How does? Okay. First thing to come to mind, you know, somebody else put it there while I was walking back through the house.
It was
space
really
bridges
well
don't make sense.
Well, she wouldn't immediately go like, oh, you teleported your motorcycle in there. Excellent. Any other thoughts on Jack's mom? Aaron, anything you've got that you want to drop in?
I don't know. My joke about bad time management. I don't know. She seemed, it's somebody that I would want as a grown up knowing what a good parent is to be a parent. Because her punishment was like, I really don't want to do this, but it's the only thing that makes sense since this is what seems to be the issue.
And the day after she comes back early to make him dinner anyway. Like,
not like, oh, I'm going to hold a grudge, you little SOB. I'm going to show you. It's no, still got to be 11 mom and make you a good dinner since, you know, to show that I do still love you after punishing you. And then it was even as she walked by the garage door, you kind of saw the reluctant, I really don't want to look in here, but I'm going to, and then she did. And it was like, oh, okay, well, now we've got now it's an issue with a capital I, not just stuff's happening. So I think it was a good, good depiction.
All right. And Omegas, anything you've got about Jack's mom?
It happens a lot in more superhero storylines than anything, but I hate this pretense that you can't even tell your direct family about this secret because it just complicates things to the point where, like, I don't like watching the cat and mouse game of can't keep the mom from finding out about the big super secret.
You know, I'm there with you in some cases where when it's drawn out over the course of a series of a secret identity thing and it takes up a lot of an episode, it does kind of grate on me after a while because I'm always like, I just want to get to that cool part when everyone does know. But yeah. That's what was so nice about this episode is like we finally get Jack's mom back in. They start doing the cat and mouse thing. By the end of it, it's all over. And I was like,
yeah, right. And that's what I was going before with the whole. They don't drag things out in this show a lot because they could have easily kept that going for several episodes, even to the season finale.
That could have been five minutes of every episode from here till the finale.
They just dropped it. So like, outside of some really rampant speculation, like there's really no clue how they're going to do the season finale yet. And we could probably have some guests going into it, but like the whole, like all these little bits of like, Megatron returning, you know, Jack's mom starting to get involved and worried and all this stuff. It's like all that stuff it's done. It's over with and we're continuously moving forward. So,
yeah.
Well, personally, I think it opens better story options to have her knowledge of what her son is doing and who his friends are.
Yeah.
And knowing, oh, wait, he's in the middle of a war between giant robots.
Exactly.
And also, her being an EMT, my first thought when they had the scene of her driving into the base was like, they have a new team member now as well. They got an experienced, you know, medical worker, not like a master surgeon or anything, but they've got somebody now on hand who knows at least some basic medicine, and maybe that can play into something in the future.
That link I just sent was somebody else's idea of the thought that I had as soon as I saw that. A fourth partnership between humans and Autobots that may or may not happen.
Okay, I like that.
That's brilliant.
Yes, Ratchet calling dibs on the nurse.
Yeah, I want a partner now.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to throw in about Jack's mom that is kind of related to something we said before, but I really liked also that she wasn't played as an antagonist. Like, even though she was not all into what her son was doing and she was disciplining him, the whole time she was presented as incredibly sympathetic, at least from what I was seeing. Just between, like, you know, the facial acting, the way that she's going about what she does. I really liked they actually played her as a sympathetic single parent in this storyline. Like, it was really nice to see that she wasn't just like, oh, it's Jack's mom. She's coming to ruin everything. Like, I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's so easy to turn her into this minor secondary antagonist just by making her too aggressive or too mean about, you know, punishing Jack. You know, you can tell she's honestly just concerned about him. He's trying to do what's best.
Yeah, and well, I think a lot of us had the same concerns about Fowler in the beginning too. I think we were all pleasantly surprised. So I'm glad that like when there's an enemy, there's an enemy, but when there's an ally, they're there. June hasn't played a big role in this so far, but yeah, they could definitely be like, oh, there's the comedic background character who's going to give us all this drama trouble in the background. It's like, no.
Yeah, when you think about
it's his loving mom. She's the good guy.
How many times, like, if we actually weigh it, I think Fowler has been a full-on helpful protagonist for far more of his screen time in the show than he has been an antagonizing government guy.
Oh, yeah. Like,
well, it was only first miniseries that he was really the antagonist.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that goes back to the storylines where they know they have to do this at some point, but they only do it once.
Exactly.
And then they move on.
And he's otherwise been, like, whenever Fowler shows up, it's always in, like, a big, like, oh, man, it's Fowler kind of moment where he shows up with, like, a platoon, like, in this case, a platoon of helicopters, like, out of nowhere. When he shows up, like, flying a fighter jet. Like in his business suit and saves the day. I love that. It's great that they don't try to make me dislike characters for the sake of having more antagonists. It's pleasant. Moving along though, another character who returned after a little bit of a hiatus was Arachnid, who was one of the focuses of this episode. She kind of clarifies that she is not a Decepticon. In this episode, she basically says she's an ex-con. She laid a trap even at the beginning, and she's been tapping into Decepticon communications, but she clearly, to me, doesn't have anything to do with Decepticon operations anymore. She just listens in on them, and she's stuck on Earth because she has no ship. So, she also was pretty creepy in this episode as well. Again, dropping words you don't think you're going to hear on a kid's show. She drops the term eviscerate in the opener. This is not going to mean much to folks who don't watch a lot of cartoons, but you know, eviscerate is one of those terms you don't tend to hear because it's not a term that is vague in any way, shape, or form. I don't know if any of you out there have been eviscerated, but it's a pretty clear cut deal when you're eviscerating somebody. Not to say I have. There's no proof. Cleaned it up a long time ago. Gog, how did you feel about Arachnid in this episode?
I love Arachnid. She also used another phrase that actually made me laugh out loud when she told Jack to man up.
I was expecting you to enjoy that. And you know what's great is that she says, Jack, pause, man up already. So if you want to make a soundbite out of it, you can just get her saying, man up already. And it's perfect.
And I was really pleasantly surprised at it, because when we did our episode on Predatory, we talked about how the prevailing theory was that she was going to get a helicopter mode, and I'm really glad that happened.
Yeah, and I want to say we can't take full credit for that. That theory, I think, was
I went back and listened just to make sure, and there was never any doubts that was a theory before we ever recorded.
Because some folks, like Q-Dog even, he's given us, like, he's saying good call on the helicopter, and I want to say, like, you know, it was a logical theory that I thought of, but I definitely was not the one who thought of it first. Like, I don't want to...
Yeah, I mean, that was basically the community as a whole. I mean, I think everybody was like, Arachnid, she's got all these arms on her back.
Reflective plate.
And there is even a part that kind of looks like the axis for a helicopter rotor. She has kind of a big set of windows on her arms. Really makes sense. So, I think everybody just said, all at the same time. But I thought it was funny because we all kind of thought maybe she would get a helicopter mode when we were talking about it on the last episode, and you were like, Mech has helicopters, and it turned out
it's not their helicopter,
except it wasn't their helicopter.
I just like oh crap again.
Yeah, and I saw some people that seemed to be a little frustrated with the fact that she scanned his. Looked like just a regular Huey type helicopter and turned into this weird looking like Apache or Comanche.
Yeah.
That has precedent in the show because while we didn't see it happen, RC did the exact same thing. RC is in a motorcycle mode. Presumably she scanned a motorcycle, but again, and we've mentioned before, it was set up in the five part opener that RC's make and model of motorcycle doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Like she's like you look at it and you're like, wow, that's a badass motorcycle, but it's not really a real motorcycle even in their world. So there is precedent for Cybertronians scanning a vehicle but yet modifying it to suit their existing body.
I
have no problem with that at all. Of the vehicle.
Yeah, they scan the form but they modify the plating pretty much as they need to.
So
way I kind of see it is more is that it has to conform to whatever configuration they are already attached to. I mean, otherwise, you've got any transformer that can assume any different form, which
is one of the stranger conceits of the movieverse. Actually, that like in the movieverse, you know, especially after the third movie. I won't say anything else, but like the movieverse has constantly made a point of showing you that like they can turn into anything because in the first movie they show you at their base level they're just gray skeleton dudes, and then they can grow all this colored plating and stuff, and it's like it works. But it is one of the weirder conceits of the movieverse that like there is no limit to what a transformer can scan, whereas in Prime it seems like there's, I don't know if it's a limitation, but it seems like there's at least a logic to the fact that she couldn't turn into a black and purple robot turns into a black and purple helicopter.
Get really lucky like Skyquake.
Just what your flavor is, maybe. You know, she's not going to go out and scan an aircraft carrier because...
Well, yeah, there's some personality to it. I mean that's how Knockout went. He wanted to be a nice, sporty, you know, little roadster, and that's exactly what he got.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's more like, okay, I'm a two-wheel vehicle. Let's see what options I have here on this planet. Oh, two-wheel vehicle.
Yeah. I was going to say, just on a tangent, I wish there was an episode, at least with a flashback of Knockout spending, like, weeks watching Earth cars and looking for the perfect alt mode.
Trying to pick the right model.
Yeah, just like walking around, just watching them from the shadows. And like,
that's the kind of stuff that would work great as a Prime comic.
Like, yes.
Because yeah. Animated did the same thing. They did like little like, well, what happened to Starscream? Oh, well, he totally ran into Professor Princess. She trapped him and wrote on him with makeup. Like little weird things like that, like little what happened behind the scenes stuff. And I think Prime could benefit to that to some degree as well.
Oh, totally, yeah. Like these little bits and pieces of off screen that would be really fun to watch or read in this case.
Continue on about Black Arachne, wow, I actually called her Black
Arachne. Don't do that, man. There's people, I've learned there is an outspoken, possibly a minority, who really don't like Arachnid for her similarities to Black Arachne.
Oh, I have no idea. It's just all this Arach stuff, syllables are
starting to be confusing.
But, Arachnid,
yeah,
she kind of sadistic, like,
yeah,
playing into the whole spider thing of likes to play with her prey, and I can totally get now because there's been people in the past that have referred to her as a female version of Tarantulas, and I can, after this episode, I'm totally on board with that.
I can see that. What do you think of the claims that she's a female Lockdown, which I personally think is a little bit of a stretch?
I mean, there's bits of that, like certainly like the whole trophy thing, but it's more of a I'm gonna eat you and then save a part and put it on my ship, versus like with Lockdown, he liked to take trophies, but it was upgrades for himself. Like that was the whole thing, is he was constantly like modifying his body and stuff and. Around to that means, and Arachnid really isn't doing that. She just wants to stick your decapitated head on her wall. So yeah. I there's definitely a difference there. I can understand though where it would be, but I totally see like okay maybe like a female version of Tarantulas, less scientist, more just serial killer with maybe a tiny bit of Lockdown peppered in there, but.
Yeah, I'd seen the line dropped more than once. Like, it's just a female Lockdown, and especially with this episode, I think that it's really gone far past any kind of simple character cribbing that might be accused at this point.
Right, and then that's the rough thing too when you try and crib a character like that. You say female Lockdown, and so many other things pop in mind. Well, she's not like folding in half to transform to get super height, or. You know, crazy weaponry on the end of the arm, you know, other Lockdown-y things. She's a hunter, and Lockdown was a hunter. And she, you know, as a hunter, she gets trophies the way that Lockdown got trophies as a hunter. So say she's a hunter, maybe, then, like you said, cribbing it to an individual character.
Yeah. Also, at no point did Lockdown ever take his dissection stuff to the point of, what was it? Arachnid dropped some line on RC of like, I'll have a session with you later. And I was like, all right, that's getting like, that's breaking down walls now. It's like, yeah, this is not just a thing I do. This is actually something I do for severe /fic inducing pleasure. It's like, all right, I see where we're going. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, that also just takes it to a level of, not sadistic, psychopathic.
Yeah, it makes me think of
absolutely no care as to the damage that I'm doing.
It reminds me a little bit of Overlord from Last Stand of the Wreckers. Like,
yes.
not just cutting people up, but like it is literally what he does to feel good. And I get that same impression from Arachnid. It's like that's what she does to feel happy, is very meticulously make sure people have a horrible time dying and then keeping a piece of their body on her ship, which is like. Kind of morbid for a kid show, in case we didn't make that point clear before, which I like. I love also actually in the opening how creepy she came off when it was just like this spider silhouette moving through the trees really fast, because it reminded me of every time I've been freaked out by a spider dropping out of nowhere in a forest or even just like in an attic, like just that shape moving through in your peripheral vision. Like I said, whoever designed Arachnid knew how to induce the arachnophobic reaction in all of us, I think.
I really like her colors too. Yeah. I really doubt anything's changed since the last. I haven't really rewatched Predatory since Crisscross came out, but her colors for some reason just really seem to be way more noticeable to me this time. And it's like, oh man,
it probably helps she's not in a forest this time. Like, she's not.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it was because this like that episode was more in like the dusk, like the twilight type of light, and this was just straight up at night in like an urban area, so like her gold accents and stuff really stood out to me.
Yeah, totally.
Looks so good.
Omegas, how would you react if Arachnid went all like, I would like to eat you very slowly?
That'd be very difficult. Being such a fan of the character, I almost wouldn't mind.
Yeah, you're kind of like, well, I mean, if it's going to make for a cool scene, I guess, hey, wait a second!
Yeah. Can I film it for YouTube? I am an enormous fan of this character. I think it speaks a lot that, you know, our very own Vangelis has traded up his insectoid obsession for an arachnid obsession.
Hey, yeah, you know what? I've seen some good insectoids, but, like, I'll always say, you know, I was waiting for an arachnoid to take the spotlight, and finally, you know, like, this isn't just, like, I'm a bipedal insect thing with four little legs on my back. This is, like, no, this is a full-on arachnoid character.
It's the arachnoid that was where your true heart was, but the insect was, well, I guess close enough since it's got multiple legs.
They've done such good insects, you know, it worked, but all this time I was always like, where's my eight legs? Where are my eight legs?
I love everything about this character. Just kind of screams predatory and just absolute sadist mindset.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
you're spot on before. It's just, you know, this isn't a Decepticon out, you know, for, you know, some grand scheme, some power crazed, you know, tirade or anything like that. She just wants to hunt and hurt, and in a kid's show, that's just so like offsetting, like in a really good way, because it's a place that you'd never see a cartoon go ever.
Yeah, like we said, like just her use of certain words and terminologies that are incredibly unsettling, especially in the context of the kind of show she's in.
It's everything about her. I mean, it's the words she uses. It's the attitude she has. It's the fact that, you know, she would rather prowl around on four spider legs. You know, it's the fact that her weapons are acid and trapping webs.
Yeah,
she wants to capture and hurt someone badly.
And I really wish I could get some kind of demographic report on how, like, you know, the younger child audience is reacting to this character. Like, I'm just curious. Like, I know that my 8-year-old self would be terrified by this character watching the show. But I'm not sure if that still is a case nowadays.
And that's a great thing. I don't know if it's just in the writing or also just the way that Gina Torres delivers the lines, but it's everything about it is that I'm a hunt you down and, you know, eat you or strip your flesh. You know, it's very direct and doesn't really play around. I mean, she plays around with a little bit, like, you know, hey, do you want, what was it? Do you want excruciating or something?
Yeah, similar word.
Or agonizing, yeah. So it's like she plays that a little bit, but it's not, there's no doubt about it in anything. It's not trying to hide it at all. So it ups that creepy an extra notch.
And what's great is that it's not lost in her talking either, because a lot of times, right, you know, you can find at least a small semblance of security in the fact it's an English-speaking character who has a personality. But in this case, that just makes it worse, because it's like, yeah, she can speak English. She can talk to her arachnid. She's still going to do all that horrible stuff to you, only now she can explain it to you as she's doing it. And it's like, oh man, there's no security whatsoever here. Very horror-esque. Like, even the... Let's talk about the cement drop. Like, even when she gets, like, the cement dropped on her, gets frozen, starts breaking out, it's like, at no point did I ever... Like, even when she's looking up at the cement dropping on her, there wasn't even any kind of, like, ah! Like, it's just like, you know, there's nothing that ever shows a hint of breaking of character in what she's doing. Like, she comes across very much as a horror movie antagonist.
Except for there's no cement that cures that quickly.
Yeah, so tell me all about cement, Aaron.
Here we go.
No, just, I mean, there is cement that cures very quickly. There's cement that will go from being separate ingredients to achieving its final hardness very rapidly in like the 5 to 10 minute time frame, but not in the something that's going to be liquid going through a large piping system and then out onto something and then curing in seconds. And there's not going to be any sort of concrete batch plant that has stuff just ready to go so that somebody can stumble over and hit a lever and have concrete magically come out.
You think that maybe this is Jack's superpower, given that this is a similar phenomenon to what happened when he picked up a fire extinguisher?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. Like, whatever he touches becomes superpowered for the sake of the plot.
He has magic Deus Ex Machina abilities.
It's not a bad thing for plot. It's not terribly far off. Concrete does get hard, and if you were to be coated in it, it would mess you up. So it was. I watched that and went, ah! It's a kid's show!
I'm still waiting for the episode where after a battle, he hops off RC and looks down and sees his part of his skin is gone, and he sees circuitry. He's like, Mom, where was Dad again? Oh, wait, yeah. I found a protoform in the woods. But, it's definitely an issue where the writers of the show are giving physical properties to everyday things that don't exist for the sake of plot. Now, this could be explained away, because one thing that is kind of positive about this whole scene with the cement curing very quickly is that lasts all of 2 seconds. Like, she freezes, it appears to have cured, RC looks at her, and the minute RC turns her back, she's in the web, and Arachnid is moving again. You could make the claim that Arachnid was totally playing possum there. I mean, granted, there was some cement sound effects.
And there was dust and crackling.
Yes, but, I mean, she was frozen for literally all of 2, 3, 4 seconds. It was nothing. So, and the fact that she was able to completely move while still covered in this stuff again, at least in my own head, I'm just going to be like, she was faking. But that's the only way you can justify that scene, because it was kind of silly.
That is a perfectly fine idea that she was like, okay, I'm covered with this. Maybe she had some sort of sound box to kick out generic concrete drying, you know, drying up sound that way. Okay,
so
now they think I'm frozen. Right, you know, it's the whole, you know, thinking like the Predator movie, you know, that sort of thing. Oh, I'm going to pretend like I've got this issue so that when you come at me, then I've got one up on you. But it wasn't, like I said, it was just something that working with a whole bunch of concrete lately, you know, if you have normal concrete coming out of a batch plant, it can be 2, 3, 4 hours and still potentially soft enough that, and especially not going to be something hard enough that a giant robot is going to be sealed up.
Yeah.
But that was just an individual knowledge nitpick thing that happens.
There was such a part of me that was so scared. Like, this is all coming together in a way, like, between Silas going, you know, we're going to take, you know, whoever loses this match, and, you know, everything's setting up to where, oh, they pointed this out. This is going to come into play in the climax. I was so scared they were seeing as many old Saturday morning cartoons as I have. This was just like, please do not let the concrete stop the giant alien metal robot.
Yeah. And even
because it would have been so easy to do it, and I was so thank you.
And don't let Mech just take Arachnid and then integrate her into that Chimera project and wipe the character from the show for another while. Like,
well, there's that too.
But yeah, like that was my worry, was that, you know, she's gonna get frozen, Mech's gonna just come out and then like cart her away, and it's gonna be like, all right, well, Arachnid's done till we see her the next time, and she'll be intricately tied into the Mech plot forever, which is not something, like, it wouldn't be bad, but I'd rather have her remaining independent, and that's what they did.
So that was the one thing I was afraid of when she fell into that truck. I'm like, don't fill the truck up and then drive off with it, because no. Not only is that cliched, but again, knowing the way that concrete works, and it's not going to be dried enough, giant robot, she'd be able to get out of it. But
Yeah, it's the only. Yeah, it's just the such an obvious cliche that I was really worried about in this episode, because you just had the one where, okay, we're only going to use one episode to deal with the mom, like, you know, wondering where Jack's going and finding out about the Autobots and all that. We're only going to do it this one time. Awesome. Mm-hmm. You have avoided that one beautifully. I didn't want them to fall right into another one.
The writers once again
have proven themselves to me very much.
Not just that they're pretty good at what they're doing, but they also seem aware of what not to do, and it just feels like so cool that it's like they do things that always make you like, oh, here we go, and then they at the end cap it in the same episode, and it's like, guess what, we knew you were worried and we still wanted to do it and we capped it because we're good, and it's like, oh man, you guys are on the ball, like Anything else about Arachnid we want to drop in? I really want a toy. I was going to say again, especially now that we know it's a helicopter, because, I mean, that's got to be a Voyager toy.
I saw your tweet earlier saying that you want to see an Arachnid toy by the end of the year, and I think that might be pushing it.
I know.
There's a good chance. I mean, we still have SDCC.
It's my wish to see it by the end of the year.
We have, like, New York Comic Con. But,
The reality is, especially if she's done properly as a Voyager toy, we probably won't see her until early 2012 at the earliest. Like, even, I'm talking photos, not just...
Yeah. There's part of me thinking that she's going to have to be a Voyager just so she has the structure for those legs to become the rotor blades.
Exactly, and also to fit in. Like, she looks like she's going to be the next animated Shockwave toy of... This is going to be a Voyager that does a hell of a lot of stuff. Like Blitzwing was also like that in animated, but I think I always look at animated Shockwave as the perfect example of a super functioning Voyager toy of like two separate robot modes, two separate vehicle modes, boom. And like in Arachnid's case, robot mode, spider robot mode, helicopter mode, boom. And then like maybe you can fan mode the drill out of it as well. Like it needs to be Voyager, I think, to be functional, but.
Well, I don't know, because I finally had to dig around to find images from BotCon that had the card on it. They're saying for the Transformer Prime first edition toys, it's July of this year.
I thought that the ones they were actually showing
were like the box had like first edition or something printed on them.
But that's at Comic-Con though, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure that was the Comic-Con version.
The Bumblebee and RC I'm sitting here looking at have first edition embossed on the side of it. And those cards call for July.
Yeah, that first deluxe run, I'm pretty sure they were calling first edition. Like, all the deluxes we've actually seen physically in that case, which were the ones that were made for Generations originally, I'm pretty sure those are all being called first edition, if not the whole first wave.
Yeah, but didn't they say, because they originally said those were going to be in October, and then they, at BotCon, they said December.
Yeah.
And I've since heard people still saying October, so I don't know if they've gone back and said October again, or if that's still people using the old date, but...
And technically, it is going to debut in July, because first edition Matrix Prime is going to be out in July, but...
Yeah.
I really want to see. Oh, I forgot that this is something I loved about the Prime packaging. The blurb sticker is 2-in-1 vehicle to robot. It's like, hell yes. It's gimmick as it transforms. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2-in-1.
Well, those often seem to be the better toys.
Yeah.
When that's the gimmick, not cyber key power.
Hey, I'm looking at RC here, and even in terms of just, and I know, you know, I'm going to say that horrible word, scale, but even in terms of scale, like, a Voyager Arachnid would work better, because you could have her with a deluxe-ish size body and then the huge legs on the back. Yeah. I suspect, especially since they're going to be doing Starscream as a Voyager as well, that she's going to probably end up Voyagerized, but...
Yeah, they've done stuff like that before, like the Hydra-dive Bumblebee. I mean, that was a small deluxe body, but the extra stuff pushed him to the Voyager price point. I think I'm on board with that. If it means selling that at the Voyager price point, even if it's still smaller or they only do it for the sheer like dimensions of the outer limits of the legs and of that nature, then I don't care. I'm fine with that.
As long as it makes a really cool and dynamic toy, it still works. Yeah. I mean, Energon loved that, packing in little toys with big accessory packs.
And right. Voyager price point packed into a deluxe size would make for, I think, some really cool engineering, too, to have all the extra budget for more moving parts.
Right. But I don't know how well that would get past some of the other issues that come along, though, because there is perceived value to size, not necessarily value to complexity.
Well, that's I think where it'll, like, again, for the thing of the box size, package her in helicopter mode with the legs fully outstretched, and it gives the illusion of probably being larger than it actually is. But this is hypothetical toy talk where we don't even have a design picture or even a stated intent to make a toy, so we should probably cap it.
It's like it's going to be a Legends.
I'd buy a Legends Arachnid too. I think a Cyberverse Commander Arachnid could actually turn out pretty cool. If it's done right, like just look at what's his name, the Dread, who's a jet, the jet that turns into the quadruped,
Hatchet.
Yeah, look at Hatchet. Like Hatchet makes me think Arachnid could be done at that price point. But moving along, I think we've given Arachnid a whole bunch of airtime, so let's bump along to the other antagonist of this episode, which is Mech. We've gotten two Mech episodes in a row after that long pause from their debut. And Mech is still pretty active, and Silas is still totally a supervillain, which is great because that's one of my favorite Clancy Brown roles, is when he's Lex Luthor, and he's that whole thing where he sends a communicator to Jack's home in an envelope, and it goes like, "Hello, Jack." I was like, "That's so supervillain! I love it." He's just like standing in his command room, looking all supervillain, arms behind his back, talking to the young boy, saying, "I've got your mom captive. Bring the alien."
Just waiting for him to get home and open up that package.
I imagine, he was just standing there all day, just arms behind his back, just imagining what he's going to say. And then he just decides on "Hello, Jack." And then, like, right afterwards, goes like, "Damn."
Just staring at the monitor. Is it there yet? Come on. Is it there? Oh, hold on. Let me check my... Oh, is it there? No, that's not there yet.
And I also like that this time, it was like, you know, last episode, Mech was victimizing a Decepticon. Like, they were kind of the bigger villains, while Breakdown was the secondary antagonist who was almost a protagonist. In this case, the episode opens with Mech getting victimized themselves. They come out like, "Hey, there's a distress signal. Let's go find an injured Decepticon, rip him up." And then Arachnid totally just wastes them, and I enjoyed that. I really like how... I almost want to say now, with this episode, we maybe even have, like, four sets not really factions, but four sets of, you know, places to go. Kind of like how in Animated, I mean, this is a comparison that people have used as a detriment, but, you know, how Black Arachnia spent a lot of time in Animated not really being on anybody's side. It seems Arachnid's in the same level. Like, I was expecting her to team up to kind of become a Mech member in this episode, but... absolutely not. She's gone off to do her own thing. So it's like we've got Autobots, Decepticons, Mech, and Arachnid as four powers at play. And I love it that they're not shoehorning and boxing people into simple roles. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And I like that Mech is still, they're gaining something every episode. This episode, you know, they lost all their technology. They tried to cut RC open, couldn't get there in time before she ran off. But by the end of the episode, Silas gets to see how they scan their vehicle forms, and apparently that made him really happy, and then he totally uses the clapper to turn the lights off and run away.
Yeah, with all the other clapper noise going on in there, I wonder how just was able to get the lights.
And it wasn't like snap and then the lights turn off, you know, like someone just heard him and then hit the switch, but no, the lights turn off on the snap.
Yeah, this isn't the made this as seen on TV clapper. This is the Mech clapper.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
This is the peak of technology.
This thing turns off when you clap, not after you clap.
What you don't realize was the excruciatingly painful surgery that had to go through to install that switch in between his index and middle fingers.
You know, that's what you do when you're a supervillain.
That's where the scar across the nose came from, actually.
It's either that or Mech has this company-wide policy. No one is allowed to snap but me.
Yeah. No one snaps, and when I snap, you turn the lights off. Like there's one Mech operative whose job it is to just stand by the light switch and watch Silas at all times. So like when he sees Silas raise his hand to snap, he's like, "Finally!" His whole career.
We did see Mech gain a little bit as far as their weaponry. Because as far as Operation Breakdown, like the only thing they had besides the little pea shooters that don't do anything to anybody except make them cover their eyes, is they had that like rail thing that shoots the whatever it is, the destabilizer something into your chest and makes you pass out if you're a Cybertronian. Mm-hmm. And with this, with RC, all they had was the laser. It went bloop. She passed out. So either that is, they have started developing new things since, new weapons since they had breakdown and have gotten into him a little bit and gotten into some of his technology, or you could explain it away as just saying that that laser only works on smaller bots and RC is smaller than breakdown, but it seems to me like they are at least making some progress in that regard. Because before they, in order to take down a Cybertronian and make him passive and pass out, you had to have a helicopter-mounted weapon on the underside, and now Silas is carrying around a laser rifle that can do the same, have the same effect.
Which they used on Jack's mom, too, by the way.
Well, that was actually, that came out of what looked like the scope on top of it. Because I went back and I was like, dang, they're using some heavy equipment on her, and then I paid attention the second time around, and whereas all of the anti-robot things were coming out of what seems to be the main part of the gun, the taser shot came out of the top scope looking bit.
Yeah,
which does make me wonder. I mean, if you've got giant robots running around and you're trying to capture them and restrain them, why would you switch back to the pea shooters?
I'm sure that's all those dudes had.
Well, that's all they had, because they had the exact same weapons in Operation Breakdown, and it was more of where Silas was thinking that his Energon eye explosive trap was going to vaporize all of them, and then he had nothing to worry about. And so you could kind of explain that with this, but I think it's just a matter of they're trying to gain technology, but up to this point they've only had human enemies, which I'm sure those many assault rifle quote-unquote pea shooters would probably take out people quite fine.
I have no doubt here, but you've got, like, in this episode, they use it to knock out RC once, and then when she frees herself, they're back to shooting bullets. No one goes to get the one gun, which is a supervillain trope that they have unfortunately fallen into. We only have one of the big super weapon that actually works.
I think it's going to also be a case where we got to see what they continue doing with mech, and if it's intentional or not, that like every episode mech has like one more good gun that works on Transformers.
Well, it could also be, if you want to play it as it's actually happening the way it should be, of they're just calibrating, and you know, with all the data they were able to get from Breakdown that they saved, okay, well, you can tune it to better affect Cybertronian physiology. And then, you know, had they gotten something out of RC, if they would have had more time, okay, well, now we know better how the smaller ones' neural activity works. Or, you know, they were going for weren't they going straight for the heart? You know, get some piece of tech like that to try and have a better idea of what's going on.
And assuming that this is a new weapon, because we haven't seen it before, they didn't use it last time when they were actively hunting Cybertronians.
Right.
Assuming that this is a new weapon, that means that they have used their recent knowledge that they uncovered by dissecting an alien to create a single working prototype. So they might not even know if it was going to work or not. And for all we know, it has enough power to only carry out a couple shots, and it was just, they carried it in the field to test it. Yeah, that's being really apologetic to the script.
Yeah.
I'm completely aware, but again, like, my whole thing is you can't hold fiction to higher standards than you would real life. If this is a new technology that they have literally just discovered from aliens and have pieced it together themselves to make a single working model, it would almost seem to be apologetic in the other way to assume that these characters could just instantly mass produce these weapons on a grand scale and all of them carry it in a matter of days or weeks, whenever this was since the last episode.
Right.
So,
well,
at least in my head, and I definitely won't accuse anybody who has a problem with that of having, of reading too much into it or not enough into it or whatever, but it's in my mind, like, little stuff like that completely works. Now, if they had if Silas had shown that he's been carrying this thing around, even in future episodes, if this is a technology now that they know works and it's been employed and they never use it again, then absolutely that's kind of poor. But
I will give it a little bit more credit there. It does make sense because we are only one episode from the last mech appearance. Like, they wouldn't have had the time to mass produce that kind of weaponry. Now,
yeah, exactly.
If we don't see them for 5 episodes and they don't have an entire, arsenal of these things by then, yeah, I'm going to be a little disappointed.
They don't have that wonderful Chinese knockoff factory that you can just toss them something and in 24 hours it's on the assembly line.
Yeah, like, I just assumed the ammunition thing myself, because I also sort of assumed that last episode as well, when they had to mount it on a helicopter, that it was a one-shot weapon that they only had one loadout for at any given time, which is a very video gamey way to think about it. I was about to try to make some kind of line about War for Cybertron ammunition, but left that behind.
Quick, someone break a barrel, get another ammo container.
That's what all the crates were. Nobody wanted to break them open. I think this is the biggest fascination with me right now, and having 2 episodes with mech in a row also has me thinking maybe mech is going to be a bit of a focal point for a little while. Again, I don't know what's going to happen in future episodes. I might be completely wrong now, but I don't know if they're going to set mech up to be some part of the season finale, but it seems like, in terms of like sub finales within seasons, maybe we're running a bit of a mech subplot right now. And I want to know how it plays out. I want to know what Project Chimera is. I'm hoping we see that during season 1.
Well, they did advance themselves a little bit more, where Silas observes them scanning in alt mode.
Exactly.
Right. I could see that being a big step forward in whatever Chimera is. And, if they're talking about building their own Transformer or pseudo Cybertronian, knowing how to, the green beam that he made that one time means that he wants to scan a new alt mode.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I see all kinds of ways for this to go. And every time I've thought that they were going to do something to forward the mech plot, they haven't done it and they've gone in a different direction. So I'm pleasantly in the dark right now. Should move on to another topic. Those were my main 3. Does anyone else have something they want to bring up from the episode? Gog. Ratchet's role in this episode. How awesome was it when he turned around and looked down?
Yeah. Hey, like I said, I just saw Ratchet just going, mine.
I thought it was impressive when she rode in, Ratchet was behind them, and then when it was time for the big group shot, he teleports in front without making a noise.
The Ratchet moves really fast.
He's like a ninja.
He's a Jeffrey Combs.
Ninja surgeon.
Yes. You're like, Doc, I kind of got this ache in my side. No, you don't. What? What do you mean? Stitches, what the hell?
Got your appendix.
I'm trying to think of another major topic, because like this episode was really dominated by those characters. I actually who we haven't talked about? Jack and RC. That's who we still have to cover, is how they they're the partnership that has been one of the strongest in this whole series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most fascinating part of this is RC is willing to leave an active battle in order to make sure that Jack doesn't get in trouble for his curfew. Absolutely hilarious. And I mean, they kind of played the scene as if they were only going up against a couple of Erraticons, which we know from viewing experience that it's like rolling a 50-sided die, and as long as you don't roll a 1, you're fine.
Yeah.
So,
well, then that was the funny thing, was it was like, okay, it kind of looks like it's this pitched battle. We're shooting back and forth. Oh, I got to go. And then Bubbly's like, all right, I'll just finish this now. decapitate. Oh, the bridge is gone. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I want to see what that fight was now. Like, I almost want another episode where they show what was going on and why they're
RC leaves.
Randomly battling.
Well, they showed it. It looked like an Energon mine. So it was just probably a battle over Energon resources, I imagine. But I like that scene too, because it shows that there's stuff going on that we don't necessarily see on screen. Like, they are doing, like, little raids and stuff here and there. It's not like every episode, like, between them is just them sitting around doing nothing. Like, there is stuff actively happening in the background.
Right.
Totally. It's not like they're all just standing in the base waiting for a kid to come in and for a plot to start. And I think that this episode was also great because it, you know, there was a lot of reaffirmations of what we already knew, but it was, I think it strengthened a lot of it. Like, you know, Jack saying, you know, like, when they're driving out to rescue his mom, he basically says to RC, like, "You're family too." And, you know, really, really ties it in. You know, makes it solid. And, also, you know, this episode, I loved it because, you know, I love the Jack and RC interplay. But also, this is another one of those episodes where you kind of stop and you kind of go like, so when's Raph ever going to do something? Poor guy is still, we're still waiting for the Raph episode that.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bittersweet because you hope that they will give the character something that makes you care. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it's almost like your affirmation of, yeah, the character kind of stinks, and maybe the writers have actually realized that.
Yeah, even the writers are going, just kind of abandoned it.
I mean, from my perspective, you can give me Jack RC episodes all day long, and I'm not going to miss the Raph and Bumblebee team up. But at the same time, it's like, well, you kind of want them to surprise you a bit, but. So, it like I said, it's a little bit bittersweet. I'm a little disappointed that nothing has happened to make me care, but at the same time, the stuff that we've gotten instead, I've liked. So, we can keep doing that, too.
Yeah, it's always a hindsight thing for me, especially at this point. So many characters have had their moments now that I keep going like, man, this is so fleshed out. Oh, right, and then there's Raph.
It's almost like they're playing to something a little bit bigger for Raph. Like, even he realizes he shouldn't be able to understand Bumblebee, but he does. But it's something that's so far on the back burner. It's almost like they forget to remind you that there's this ongoing thing with him, too.
And it's also just like the thing of he's literally not in the episode. Like, I think he's in the very end. Like, Raph and Miko are there turning around.
Yeah, Raph and Miko, I think, are high up in the corner of one of those shots.
But yeah, I mean, just like this topic was basically Jack and RC, but it also highlights just like, you know, Jack and RC is tremendously fleshed out, I think, now for this far into season one, with this many characters, you know, recurring in the show. You get these moments like, you know, saying, you know, RC, your family, or, you know, when he's walking her up to the driveway at the beginning and she's all like, you know, thanks for walking me home like a gentleman. I was like, man, that's another great, you know, buddy partner line to drop to strengthen the clear bond the characters have. Miko and Bulkhead have had a lot of their own moments now as well. And then, like, the one of the biggest Bumblebee episodes, the street racing one, Raph wasn't in it. It was, like, Bumblebee and Jack. And then, like, you know, Bumblebee and Raph had a little bit of a moment in the Megatron returning two-parter. But, again, it kind of felt like Raph was about to start doing something to become a full-on character in the cast, and then he just kind of, like, got left behind. And it became a lot more about Bumblebee than it was about Raph. So, on the bright side, Jack and RC is a real solid pairing, and I'm happy about that.
We continually get some of the best episodes. I mean, RC had, like, you know, this is like just the fight scene in this episode alone.
I was going to get to that in the animation, but I mean, it technically was very much the RC show and all the RC interacting show on that fight scene. It was so well done.
I read a post I think last week where somebody said that. They wished that Prime would get killed off, so then they could just go ahead and name the show Transformers RC.
I did see another quote on Twitter, which I you know, I'm not that far against the Optimus Prime in the show, but I couldn't deny it was a good quote, which was Transformers Prime is at its best when Prime isn't in it. And I was kind of like, that's kind of true. Like, he's, you know, I think, you know, we've all warmed up to Optimus a little bit more than we were warmed up to him in the five-parter, but you know, for a show called Transformers Prime, where in the outset, when we were getting the initial publicity for it, it was like, this is the show that's all about what it takes to be a Prime. Optimus Prime is one of the least important factors in what's enjoyable about the show so far.
Yeah, and there was actually a thread just exactly about that. I think the thread title, which came up after this episode, said, you know, for I thought the show was called Transformers Prime, Prime in quotes, and it was somebody asking, like, you know, we're not getting a lot of Prime development for a show called Prime, and somebody brought that up. It's like, yeah, wasn't in the original solicit for the show was one of the things that, and I think the prevailing theory right now is that because we got that really early, like way before we had seen any character designs or anything, I'm pretty sure. And it was like one of the very first things that we had heard about the show. Because I remember me, you, and Seth talking about it and about like what it means to be a Prime. And it's like, well, we kind of got that with War for Cybertron. We got that with Animated. And now It sounds like we're getting that again with Transformers Prime. Because I remember this was long ago. And I think the prevailing theory right now for that is just that was an original conceptual thing and has kind of been either put on the back burner or abandoned entirely.
Yeah, because, I mean, the theme of this show so far, you know, exemplified by episodes like this, it's not about Optimus Prime at all. It's about the bonds of partnership, family, and whatnot. Like, it's about being a tight-knit group when the whole universe is kind of empty and against you. Like it's all about, you know, being a small group who's stranded and how close the bonds become between that group, kind of. And it's not about Prime.
Yeah, it kind of speaks to the writer's priorities a little bit because you know, I think it's the same reason that we haven't gotten a Wrath episode really is because he's partnered with Bumblebee. You know, everyone knows Bumblebee. You know, the same way that, you know, you don't have to develop Prime because everyone knows Prime, and same for Megatron. Their priority seems more or less that they know that the fandom has generally had a negative opinion of human characters in the past. Like, you know, like even Gog said it early on, it's like you grade it based on how irritating the human characters are. You know, it's not Fred and Billy, it's not Kicker. Now we're going to Disablob. But along with that, you've also got this really big emphasis on making these really cool female characters because their toys traditionally don't sell well either. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like they've spent so much time compensating, they've forgotten to get some of the basics out of the way, like developing the lead hero.
Well, it's a very self-aware show in some ways, where it's like, you know, we were saying before about how it constantly almost falls into cartoon tropes and then, you know, cuts them off before they become too old. Right. And you know, it's doing all kinds of things we'd love to see. Like, it's having strong female Transformer characters, which is, you know, usually there's a strong female Transformer character for the majority of a show. This one's trying to really, you know, not make a big deal about the female aspect of it while still having strong female characters, which is also great. It's having strong human characters. It's having great interplay between Transformers. It's fleshing out, you know, world-building concepts. It's doing a whole lot of stuff that, like, it seems the writers are very aware of what the long-term fandom does enjoy. And I think it's kind of like, you know, I don't mind. I want to make sure, you know, people know this when they hear this. I don't mind that the show is not about Optimus Prime. I just think it is kind of, you know, interesting how it seems that the show's intentions have very much changed since its inception.
And I know we've brought that up several times of the fact, and it has been a fact, at least up to a certain point, of that female Transformers generally don't really sell all that well, but I want to know your guys' opinion. Are those days behind us? Because animated RC, she was very popular, but it was also because she was kind of the first ever RC inspired toy. But like even the movie 07 RC toy, from what I saw, that still seems to be pretty popular. The out of the motorcycle triplets from Revenge of the Fallen, maybe not necessarily Chromia, but the other two seem to sell pretty well. At least the one actually called RC. Maybe it's just the name RC lately because she has gone without a toy so long. Seems to sell on its own merit.
But yeah, for every new set of fans that the movies bring in, who are very nostalgia driven fans, they see RC and they go like, they never made a toy of RC. I always wanted one of those, and like, you know. Yeah. It's a very good name.
Do you guys think that a toy just being female will hurt that in today's society? Because
I don't think so really, especially in Transformers, because they've as a company, Hasbro's gotten so smart about their presentation on the shelf. Like, you know, you look at you know, they made the conscious decision for the mainline Voyagers to be packaged in robot mode, because apparently that was you know, they figured out that kids were looking at the Voyagers in vehicle modes and not really realizing what they were off the shelf. So I think that can play into, you know, when you present the female characters. One thing that probably helps is the fact that, like, you know, Deluxe RC will be packaged in vehicle mode. So when kids look at the toy, they don't, you know, if this is still a factor, you know, the little boys in the toy aisle don't see that as a girl. They see it as a motorcycle. And
right.
And if they see the show, it's also strengthened by the fact that it's a strong character. So, like, I want to be Jack. I want to hang out with the cool motorcycle.
It's kind of hard to tell these days because you've got such a variety going. Like, I remember, you know, toys like Override back in Cybertron not selling too well around here. And animated, I don't know how it was everywhere else, but Black Arachnia shelf warmed horribly here.
Although
toward the end of the line, I could still find her.
She sold through all right here.
I saw a lot of Black Arachnias around here after a while, when Wave 2 hit. Like, Ratchet did go faster than Black Arachnia. Although, in her case, I'm curious if it's also because she was a non-vehicle in a line that seemed full of vehicles.
That's what I mean by it's a little hard to determine if we're past that yet, because we haven't had a solid vehicular female Transformer. The closest we've got have been the triplets, RC bikes from the movie. And around, you know, again, I can only speak of around here, Elita 1 hit clearance aisles in droves here.
Yeah,
no one bought her up.
She was from the doomed wave of, you know, the Wave 2. Hunt for the Decepticons, who were overall kind of
even that I can remember the bikes being very easy to find around here, even RC.
I think also what's going to help Arachnid is the fact that she has a vehicle mode now, which means that she has helicopters. What's cool? Helicopters. What's really cool? Black helicopters. So, like, I think that's going to help her a lot because she won't fall into the potential trap of being stuck in an arachnid mode that kids might just find really unappealing to look at. They'll see it as a helicopter first. I don't know. But as for the whole thing of, you know, female characters not selling well, I don't know if any of us are in a good enough position to really make the call, but I don't see it as being as big a problem. I couldn't imagine it's as big a problem now, just with, you know, we're a more forward thinking society for one. And also, you know, there's larger demographics of, or a larger variety of demographics buying toys now. That's something that I'd almost want to ask Hasbro that at BotCon, but being the design panel, I'm not sure if they'd even be in the position to have a full answer for it. Like, that seems like something that'd be more to ask Hasbro corporate or Hasbro PR, but
yeah, that would be a fun panel.
Yeah, tell us the demographics panel. Tell us all about demographics. Like, I'd actually find a lot of interest in, like, what are the reasons behind certain ways of packaging toys, like, you know, that we've heard before. I want to hear that expanded on, like, you know, package the Voyagers in robot mode, package Energon Wingsaber so that he fits in this box in a certain way, so he can break up to fit in the box in a certain way. That stuff I find kind of interesting. That's the kind of bullet point stuff I really eat up. As for female characters selling well, with Transformers, I think I'd want to think that it's a different case than with any other action figure line, just because they can be presented as a completely non-female form on the shelf. But I don't know. Any other thoughts on that, or we kind of tapped on that one?
Yeah, I'm done with it.
All right. Just to throw down a little something on the animation, I want to say the fight scene between Arachnid and RC at the end of the episode was really fantastic.
Right, good. I really like the silhouette kung fu.
Yeah, and
type of look,
and the camera motion as well was really well done. And this was kind of hinted at almost in that clip of a fight scene we had with RC and Bumblebee. The camera following them around in this kind of, you know, faux handheld turned out really well, I thought. And in the RC Arachnid fight, they had a lot of great sweeping camera motions to accent the action as it happened. It was really cool to watch. It always brings me back to, you know, in the opening five-parter, it's kind of like, the action's neat, but a little bit stilted. And now it's just like, this is not stilted at all. Very happily eating the crow pie on that one. But did you guys notice anything in particular about the animation that struck you, or the coloring, or the mood how things were shot?
RC chest watch black.
Oh, I was going to ask you.
I am starting to think that the pink diamonds were the mistake rather than the correction.
I thought I saw the pink diamonds on her vehicle mode in this episode in the garage.
Oh, gosh. Now you're starting to...
I gotta go through and catalog that now.
I'm gonna check it right now. Hang on. You guys talk about the pink diamonds. I don't know.
So no pink diamonds this time.
No pink diamonds this time.
Yeah. After we had to break that down in the thread quite extensively.
I was really amused that we had one guy come in the thread going like, what are you crazy people talking about? And then you showed him the comparison side by side, and he had that same reaction I had when Omega showed it to me. And I was like, oh no, it's true. Now I have to look for it every time. Hang on. I'm jumping ahead to where RC shows up in the garage. What do you guys think of just the dark lighting in a lot of the episode? Like it seems to almost be packaged with, you know, mech and arachnid.
Yeah. I wasn't real fond of it because I didn't have a high def encode, so it just made it seem like it was poorly filmed at times. Some of the fight scenes. I mean, I like the dynamic shadow stuff with the fight scenes, but there are times I'm like, can it be like twilight, not midnight?
Okay, I was. I'll clarify now. I saw it. I didn't see the pink diamonds. I saw the pink paint accent on the front of the part that goes over the front wheel on the motorcycle. What is it called? Like that, the part that cups in front of the front wheel, beneath the headlights,
the
cowling. Yeah, or the fender, or whatever it's called. I don't know.
The fender. Yeah.
But that part had a pink app on it that I hadn't really noticed before. But I think that's one that people have brought up in past. So. Never mind.
That I've seen before.
Okay, it's not pink diamonds. That's the thing. So no pink diamonds on the vehicle mode. Okay. Crisis averted. This is not going to get crazy.
I will say the as far as the lighting and stuff goes, like that part that we've talked about so many times, where they're standing on the railing thing, and they're standing in front of the moon, and then you get that part where it shows them their silhouettes, but then it basically zooms in onto Arachnid. And you just get this awesome, like, the moonlight is coming from one side, so the window piece, like the mirror window helicopter cockpit part is just reflecting, like, light all over the place, and it's on, like, one side of her face, and it just, I don't know. It was, that part was really cool, and they're coming a long way with their lighting and stuff. I think they've always done a really good job in low light. I've always been really kind of fascinated by it. Like the part where we talked about before, like Starscream basically torturing Fowler in that interrogation room on their ship. And it's just this dark room with like light coming from, I think, above. I don't remember.
Hard light too.
Yeah. But the part with Arachnid in the moonlight just coming from the one side was I noticed that the first time watching it. Like, oh, this is really cool looking.
They should totally tell the Play Arts Kai photographer how to do low lighting properly. What they should do. It's a throwback to some What We Got This Week talk. Aside from that, that's my usual run of topics. I think all covered now. I'm not sure if there's anything else in the episode to bring up. The plot of it was pretty simple. It's, you know, Jack's mom's brought into it. She gets kidnapped by the villains and then saved. It's kind of, you know, it's a very cartoon plot, but that's something that Prime is good at, is you take a very simple plot and you deliver it as effectively as possible. And I think I said this about another episode where it's like the plot is simple, but the strength of the episode is in the fact that the characters are so strong that even the simplest plot comes across really well, because it's being delivered by strong characters who don't rely on a good plot to be interesting. They can be interesting just on their own. Not to say I think this was a bad plot. I think this was a fine plot. But, you know, whenever Prime gets a somewhat weak plot concept, or even just a simple one, the characters are so strong, they make anything come across as meaning something, being serious, and mattering.
Yeah, that's a sign of it being a good show, is it could be something that isn't a normal show topic or is short characters, and it still turns out to be a very good episode that advances plot. It just seems very, very good in that. And the last couple three have been that way of like, oh, it's another Jack and RC episode. And this time the mom finds out, woo! And it's like, oh, wow, that was very good, very progressive. Bravo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like lately it seems like with every new episode, it's like, man, I wonder if this is my new favorite episode. And I remember, like, in the beginning, like, we watched the five-parter. It's like, okay, I have a foundation for what the show is going to be, who the characters are, what the animation is going to look like, what the voices sound like. We had the Scraplets episode, and I think for a little while, like, that was my favorite episode. Like, for me, the benchmark was, okay, is this going to be better than the Scraplets episode? And I'm like, is it like, every new episode we watch, I'm like, man, is this the new baseline? Is this the new benchmark? Like, I just remember, back early on, it's like I had my few favorite episodes. I'm like, well, I liked it, but maybe not as much as the previous one, or maybe it's not as much as that one. But it just seems like lately, every new episode to me just really feels like they're really knocking it out of the park, with maybe a couple extra, like, or a couple here and there exception, like maybe Shadow Zone. I still really like Shadow Zone, but it definitely wasn't in my top of any list as far as my favorites. But just lately, like, yeah, there's just been so many really good episodes.
I couldn't even try to tell you what my favorite episode is right now, because I've enjoyed a large number. I don't think I've hit an episode in Prime yet that I outright disliked. There have been episodes that have been weaker, but, you know, as I said, due to the strength of the characters, there are still moments in those episodes that I felt made my time worth it. And to try to pick a favorite right now is hard, because I'm pulled in so many directions. Like, my first instinct is I'll just go like, well, what's a good Knockout episode? I love Knockout. And then it's like, but Air Act is pretty cool, and she's had two episodes now, so maybe one of those. And then it's also, what was an episode with a great Soundwave moment? Because I still really love Soundwave, even though he's hardly in the show.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
We need a Soundwave episode desperately. I think it was on all of our wish lists there for a while, like, but I think it was a foregone conclusion that we were eventually going to get one, and he's just not even in the show, except for like a scene over the shoulder. Now it's like,
you know what I think is logical. Logical thing is a Soundwave Wrath episode, because they both actually match up pretty well as characters. They're both very technology based. I think, like, if they're going to do a Wrath or a Soundwave episode, it's probably going to be in tandem.
Be like a counter hacker.
Yeah, and then, like, Soundwave just, I don't know. I like the idea also of just maybe Soundwave showing up and just kind of, when he finally speaks, he's like, what's up with you, you wolf? How do you...
Yeah, what the hell?
How do you hack a helicopter with your laptop? And how do you talk to Bumblebee? You terrify me.
How do you backhack with a single button?
Yeah.
One thing, too, before I forget, like, because I have the episode going right now in the background, but one of my favorite lines that I don't think we mentioned was back when June was tied up. And she says, is that your motorcycle? And Jack says, I can explain. Oh, wait, I already did.
Yeah.
I was like, you were serious?
That was another case of, I think, taking a cartoon trope and kind of just, you know, farcing it out, laying it out on the ground and giving it a big smack on the face of like, you know, is that your motorcycle? It's like, yeah, Mom, I'll explain the whole show to you off screen. And it's like, he explained the whole show to her when he just kind of lost patience. Like, all right, time to stop lying. I'll tell you the whole synopsis of the show. And she kind of goes like, so are you hanging out with a sci-fi club then? Like, I love how they just take everything that you expect, and they kind of, you know, it still happens, but they tweak it just a little bit to not be as predictable. And I enjoy that so much about the writing on the show. My favorite lines already came up, like the man up line was also one of my favorites. And the session line, just for being creepy on an overlord level. In all, I enjoyed the episode quite a bit. It's definitely one of the ones where I'd say, like, if someone is out there going like, I only watched the five-parter and I don't want to watch this show, I'd go like, Crisscross is probably worth your time, even though it won't make a lot of sense because it has a whole bunch of established characters. But just even the fight scene in Crisscross, could get a lot going. And I don't know, the only other thing I got is like, well, I'll end with this one. So does anyone else have anything else they want to drop in?
I liked how much I could get just looking at Jack's not Facebook page.
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's see what we got. Silas had a private message. and like 12 new messages. See, I think Miko just changed her avatar because she's on there twice. The girl he was trying to hook up with was messaging him on there.
Ooh.
And his relationship status is it's complicated.
Yeah, I got a really big kick out of that because it's just gonna fuel the fire.
Oh, it's so gonna fuel the fire.
The fanfics.
Yeah, I forgot all about that Facebook page. That was golden. I loved it.
Oh man, I didn't freeze frame that at all. So I got to go back and look at that now.
I didn't even think about freeze framing that.
Yeah, it was funny. It was just a quick little thing, but they put a lot of effort into just a incidental thing like that. It was It was pretty good.
Anything else anyone wants to bring up before we close out? We all good?
We're all good.
My last thought, going off of something we talked about in the previous one, now that we are post-Dark of the Moon, you know, looking at Twitter, seeing people, you know, kind of enjoying the movie, seeing some people flipping out about how much they dislike the movie, it's real secure reading all that and kind of going like, no matter what all these people do, no matter what the franchise does to react and not react, no matter where it goes, right now we have a secure and pretty good TV show going on for another couple weeks, another couple months even. Like, I feel like the franchise is in a really good place right now, for fans at least, where it's like, you know, if you didn't like the movie, guess what? You got a good cartoon to fall back on. You like the movie? Great. There's more good Transformers media coming. You aren't going to be stuck rewatching the movie for a couple months waiting for something to come out. It's so nice to have the sense of security. I really like it.
You know what's funny is, because we're recording this on Wednesday evening. I know at least me, Vangelis, and Aaron all saw Dark of the Moon yesterday night on Tuesday.
Second time for me.
Yeah, for you it was your second time. But the first thing that I, like, as I was walking out to my car, I'm like, okay, well, the movie's over. For the foreseeable future, the movie franchise seems to be finished. And I was, like, the first thing that I thought of is, like, It feels so good now that we can just concentrate on Prime. Like, that was my first thought. It's like, this is over. What do we have? We got Prime. Like, that's really cool. And that did. Like, that really struck a chord with me as I was thinking about that after the movie.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, after Revenge of the Fallen, we were still in animated, right? Like, I don't remember my timeline exactly well off the top of my head, but Revenge of the Fallen ended, and then we went into some animated, right? Like, that's how I recall it going.
The animated actually... ended
before.
Right before, because we saw Revenge of the Fallen was the 09 BotCon, and I remember that ended like literally I think just weeks before the movie came out.
So ended, then we did Revenge of the Fallen.
Then we did Revenge of the Fallen.
So
then we had
the last
nothing.
Wave of the animated toys were all hung up because of Revenge of the Fallen.
I wanted to confirm that because I was trying to remember, because I remember after Revenge of the Fallen I was kind of like, you know, I think that a lot of the discussion people were having online, which got real vitriolic, was kind of driven also by the fact that the only thing media-wise we had to talk about was Revenge of the Fallen. In this case, with Dark of the Moon ending, we can talk about Dark of the Moon, but you know, if you don't want to talk about it, it's not all that's there. There's a good show happening right now, and it is such a good feeling. And like you said, it's so nice that, you know, we're gonna have at least one or two. I'm really sure we're gonna have two podcasts about Dark of the Moon. I'm gonna have a, you know, I've written a long written semi-review of it. I'm going to add another bit, you know, that's a little bit more spoilery. I'm going to translate all that into a vlog at some point. And when all that's done, I'm not going to be sitting there going like, well, I guess I just got to go into the movie forum if I want to see people discussing media. It's like, no, we got Prime going. We got Prime time happening. We got a good show going on. We got a toy line to look forward to. Dark of the Moon toys have surprised me in how I am actually enjoying them twice as much as I thought I was going to based on photos. It's a good
time. After
the
movie, I'm going to have to buy so many more toys now.
That too. The movie did its job in making me want to buy some toys, for sure. But, I don't know, for all the people, you know, who are loving or hating Dark of the Moon, I am going to stand by my stance right now that right now is a good time to be a Transformers fan at this point in time. It's, you know, it might get worse later on, it might get better later on, but right now, and for the next couple months, I think we're in a really great place, because no matter what you like, there's going to be something for you, I think, right now. Unless you really hate Prime as well, in which case, you know, I hope you really like the IDW comic books, because that's all you got.
Well, you got G1 reruns on the hub.
That too.
Yeah, 4th of July, they're going back and forth between Prime and G1.
Yeah, or you have Shout Factory putting out Headmasters and Beast Wars.
So. That's true. If you want Beast Wars, if you want classic Japanese stuff, if you want G1, it's all out on DVD and Shout Factory is a damn good DVD company, doing some really nice releases. I'm going to stand by the fact. I think right now is a great time to be a Transformers fan, and I don't mean that in the movie is so great. Because, here, little preview. I liked a whole lot of the movie, and I had big problems with a whole lot of the movie. I'm very much, I got almost an equal list, I think, of pros and cons on that one. And so I'm, for everyone who wants to just fight about Dark of the Moon, go and have fun. I'm interested in having objective discussion about it, because we're having great objective discussion about Prime. And at this point, having done Prime Time so much, having done this podcast so much, I really don't have time for, who can bash their chest hardest about what they like or dislike. I think that, especially with Prime happening right now, what the movie's done, I've hit a level where it's just like, I want to have discussions like these. Or, as I'm predicting our Dark of the Moon discussions are going to go, I want to have discussions like those. That's what interests me. Anything else, I just kind of feel like, why am I spending my time doing this, I'd rather talk like this than go on to, your average movie discussion forum and start having it out with people who either want to talk about how the movies have ruined their lives or the other people who want to talk about how the movies have changed their lives for the better and how can you fools not see the glory in these pieces of cinema.
You don't want a topic going over the minutiae of the fact that Agent Fowler's waistband size appears to be fluctuating back and forth.
Is that real? Tell me that's real. Please tell me that's
real. No, it's not. I was trying to come up with something totally goofy without I had a couple spoiler things, but I remember this isn't the movie. This is Prime, so I started editing in there.
And the way that I relate this back to Prime Time and my little tangent there is that I think we had great discussions on Animated and Revenge of the Fallen, but I think Prime Time has been like, in terms of our ability to discuss these episodes, I feel like for me as a member of this discussion, it's a hell of a lot of fun. And
I always have fun because the regular episodes are great. I mean, I like talking about the news most of the time, but with the news and that sort of thing, it's your topics are decided for you whether it's something you're really interested in or not. But with this, it's just, here's a single topic, let's just have a blast with it. And it's I like these topical topics. I really missed the topical discussion, but I really liked doing that with Animated. And I almost kind of miss having as many people as we did, because we had pretty much our whole crew and a guest. And it got a little hectic sometimes, but it was a little fun. I think this is probably easier to listen to and easier to produce and it's probably the better solution. But the topical stuff is always neat. I'm really looking forward to talking about the movie. I'm going to see it again tonight, but the Prime episodes recording, the Prime Time episodes are a lot of fun, and it kind of helps the fact that I'm really enjoying the show as well.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that we are doing that's a bit of a faux pas from an objective standpoint, it's that we don't have someone on here who actively dislikes Prime, but a lot of folks who actively dislike Prime don't want to make the time to actually watch it every week, which is a completely understandable position.
Right. So. Plus, it's part of my deal that I really like about the podcast is we don't have somebody on here that's a Transformers hater. Because if you want to do some sort of balance in there, you need somebody that's not fond of it, but then somebody that's not fond of it likely isn't going to be keeping up or making our experiences enjoyable. If we got somebody in here that's always stupid. You like Jack and RC? God, you're stupid. What the heck?
I understand exactly where you're coming from, but the Transformers franchise is so varied. There are so many different iterations of it. There's so many different facets that, I mean, just being a Transformers fan gives no description at all of what you're into.
Yeah,
like, I met a guy today at work. I did a service call at his house. He when he answered the door, he was wearing a Power Master Prime t-shirt and had Dreamwave G1 posters all over his house. And he had a family. And he was obviously a G1 fan. He's a Transformers fan, but he's in the G1 all the way, even modern versions of it, but still G1. You could have Transformers fans that are into nothing but the movie stuff.
Yeah.
You have Transformers fans that are hardcore animated fans. So, like, you can certainly have people that are still not necessarily... I understand this wasn't exactly what you were saying, but you can have people that aren't necessarily just full-on bleh on Transformers, but could easily be that way with a certain aspect.
Well, I think
so and that's one cool thing about like our franchise is good.
Oh, we're super lagging. I could hear myself pop up there a few seconds later. I was just going to throw out there. I think that the thing that I hope that we keep providing with Prime Time, because I know that, you know, most of our listeners probably really like Prime, but we are trying to offer crits where we see them. We've actually gotten quite a bit of flack for offering crits where we see them, but that's always been my hope with our approach. So, you know, we're kind of just talking about ourselves now. But, you know, because Dark of the Moon is so fresh, like, I'm kind of amping myself up for the Dark of the Moon podcast. And I really want to – I'm going to try to make sure I can get a whole lot of people to listen to that podcast, because I think it's going to be – you know, a lot of other podcasts, like, you know, Moonbase 2 are also great about doing this. But it's going to be one of the times you're going to be able to hear people talk about a Michael Bay movie in a way where – you can feel welcome listening to it no matter what you think of the movie. Which has always been my aim talking about the Michael Bay films ever since I started doing this stuff when Revenge of the Fallen was I want to provide material so that you can listen to people discussing the film and get something out of it, whether or not you liked it or disliked it. Cause that's the best way to actually go about talking about media, I think. Yeah, we should probably cap this one because we're talking about Dark of the Moon at this point. What's up, Omegas?
Hi. Hey. I'm here.
So we're gonna cap this one off. We will have some Dark of the Moon talk. Mark my words. It'll probably be heavily unedited because it'll probably be real big, and I just want to get it out. It'll be fun. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, we will also be back with Prime Time when we get another Prime episode. I believe this weekend we don't have a new episode, thank goodness, so we can actually make this week more of a Dark of the Moon week. Thanks for joining me, Gog, Aaron, and Omegas, and we will see you all the next time. Until then, we are Prime out!
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.